Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Friday Spotlight episode, and it's also a 12 Days of the Comic Source episode. Today, I'm going to be talking about Marvel Holiday Special 1992. It's actually cover dated 93, but that's because most of the time the cover date on these is February, and then they're, you know, they come out in December, or just in time for Christmas. So a few original stories in this one. From some Marvel creators, we have Wolverine and Zounds, Oh Silence by Larry Hama and Michael Golden, a couple of real comic legends there. We have a New Warrior story by Fabian Nicieza, Derek Robertson, and Larry Maltzot. Spider-Man by Stan Lee and Steve Lytle with John Costanza. A Punisher story by Carl Potts, Rick Levins, and Al Milgram. Doc Samson story by Peter David, John Abair, and Mike DiCarlo. There's a Thanos story by Jim Starlin, Ron Lim, and Terry Austin, that sort of classic creator team up from the Silver Surfer run leading into Infinity Gauntlet. There's also an Iron Man story by Sholly Fish and Tom Morgan. And then we finish up with a Daredevil story by Ann Nesenti, Tom Greinberg, and Fred Fredericks. So we'll kick it off with the Zounds of Silence Wolverine story, and just as the title implies, it's very much a silent issue. So by Larry Hama and Michael Golden, and it starts off with Wolverine popping his claws, and he looks to be attacking Fin Fang Foom. It's definitely a green monster, and what's interesting is as he's kind of tearing him up, the background looks very strange. It's hard to tell what it is. Almost looks like wrapping paper in the background. We see a face that's super distorted at one point, and then Wolverine's being fired on by what looks like toy soldiers, like little toy army men, you know, the little green army men, and he's taking them out. We turn the page, and now there's some sort of helicopter that's attacking him that he's trying to escape from. Following that, another appearance of Fin Fang Foom, who has apparently recovered and is attacking again. The helicopter makes another pass at him as well, and he's able to avoid the helicopter. It crashes into Fin Fang Foom, and it looks like Wolverine is going to survive the day, when all of a sudden there's a giant arm that grabs him. And then a cannon shows up, and it fires out what looks like lava at him. And he's like melting, and don't know if his healing factor is going to kick in time. And again, no words, no dialogue, no dialogue boxes, no word balloons, nothing. And then right after that panel where Wolverine looks to be on fire with the hot lava, we see a young boy who is holding a giant like super soaker gun, and somebody's grabbing him by the arm. And he's turning to look over his shoulder at the person that's grabbing him. And we see in his hand, he's dropping a Wolverine action figure. As we turn the page, we see he actually was playing with a bunch of toys in the toy display. And we see, you know, Legos and army men and the super soaker and stuffed dragons and a toy helicopter and all sorts of stuff. And the Wolverine action figure is laying there on the ground, face down, dripping water as the boy is being hauled off by his mother, and she's shaking her hand at him, you know, because he's probably gone off to play in the toy section while she's shopping, and she didn't know where he was. And he's wearing he's wearing a Marvel Comics like Letterman style jacket with Spider-Man on the back. And as the camera zooms in on the Wolverine action figure that's laying there, he pops his claws with a snicked. So just a really fun story. I love these silent stories, and I'm not sure why there's so much of a trend to do them in these holiday issues, but it definitely is a trend. And I really enjoyed this one because, you know, you're just like, what the heck is Wolverine doing? The fact that there's no dialogue, there's no exposition, there's nothing to explain this craziness that he's going through, and he's, you know, facing all these different obstacles, and there's no context whatsoever. And then to find out it's a kid just using his imagination, it's the best, right? It's the best. And certainly at Christmas time with toys and holiday season, Yeah, so a really, really great, fun story from Larry Hama and Michael Golden. Loved it. Great way to kick off the holiday special. We get a pinup on the next page of Excalibur from Dave Cockrum. And then the following story is the New Warrior story called Present Tense. I mentioned the creators, Nisiezo Robertson Maltzat. We also have Joe Rosas on colors and Brad Joyce on letters. And we see a Santa being mugged in Manhattan, and Night Thrasher's there to sort of save the day along with Silhouette. And one thing I will say about this this New Warrior story, you know, this creative team, they're the team that was on the New Warriors at that time, like the regular New Warriors comic. So this one, you can kind of get the gist of what's going on, but if you were reading New Warriors at the time, you're going to get a lot more out of it because there's a lot of topical stuff that relates to their current situation and what's going on in their regular title. So after Night Thrasher and Silhouette take care of these guys that are mugging Santa, Night Thrasher is kind of wondering, like, why would they steal money from a charity worker? You know, that's money that's given for the needy. And Silhouette's like, well, maybe they were needier. And Night Thrasher's like, what's that like, you know, to not have, to want, to need, especially during the holidays? And Silhouette says, Dwayne, if you've never wanted for anything, then how can I explain needing for everything? Like, you'll have no context. So later on, we see Speedball is out shopping, and he's talking about how, you know, he's using his parents' plastic, and he's buying a bunch of stuff, and he's talking to his friend Elvin, who is much less fortunate, you know, and he's buying just one tiny little Eiffel Tower for his grandmother. And Speedball can't really, it's like, why are you being so cheap? Why are you? He's like, well, this is, we only ever give one gift because that's all we can afford. And Rob, he feels a little guilty. He's like, oh man, I'm sorry. He's like, no, don't worry about it. Let's head over to the crash pad. We're meeting everybody for dinner, right? So again, we're getting context of what the different and various members of the New Warriors are up to for the holidays. On the following page, we get Firestar calling Vance Astro, who's in jail. I don't know why. At the time, I wasn't reading New Warriors. And they're talking about how, you know, she's sorry that you couldn't get him anything for Hanukkah. You know, he's locked up. And he says, you know, the best gift of all is just getting your present. So there's that going on, apparently, with him in jail. And then we see on the next page, somebody named Richie. Again, I don't have any context for this. I don't know who Richie is, but he's going to see his girlfriend. And obviously Richie is some member of the New Warriors, but I don't know who, because again, I'm not familiar enough with them. But he's kind of one, you know, it's a fancy house, and I think it's Richard Rider, but I'm not 100% sure because he has long hair, and I've never seen him have long hair, but I think it's Nova, because he does mention going up against Terax. But anyway, he rings the doorbell, and he's, you know, it's Greenwich, Connecticut, and it's this mansion and Laura Dunham's parents' home. And she invites him inside to meet everybody. He kind of begs off, I'm kind of shy. And, you know, he doesn't feel like he's worthy. But he does give her a ring, a very beautiful looking ring. It looks like a diamond ring. He's like, it's pure cubic zirconia. She's like, I know, I love it. And he's like, I don't have your present. He's like, no, it's fine. You know, we never said we were going to exchange presents or whatever. She's like, no, it's not that I don't have it. It's just that our present is going skiing at Vermont. We can stay at my parents' place up there. Just, you know, one fireplace, just me and you. So clearly she's very rich. It kind of intimidates him. And again, you know, I think you get more out of this if you were reading the New Warriors regular series at the time. So I don't know that this works. This story works this well in an anthology, but maybe that was the point. Maybe Marvel wanted people to, I'm curious. Let me go pick up New Warriors. On the next page, we see named Marita, and it just talks about how being half human and half Atlantean, she doesn't really understand Christmas or really understand it. She's kind of all alone. So she goes flying off to meet the rest of the New Warriors. And then on the last couple pages here, we do see them all gathered together. They talk about exchanging gifts, and they're like, wait, no, we weren't supposed to exchange gifts because we agreed we weren't going to get anything for everybody. And Rob's, you know, probably with his parents' credit cards, like, oh, I got gifts for everybody. I can finally give you all your presents. But he's actually tricking them. He stuck to the agreement. He didn't get anything for them. But what he says is, what I want to give you is my thanks for saving my butt time and again and making the world a better place, and, you know, for being best friends. And they all toast to happy holidays. So yeah, happy holidays from the new Warriors, apparently. But again, it kind of captures, there's a few moments here that kind of capture the holiday spirit, but not in a really, you know, over the top way. And being that you just need the context of what's going on in the regular series, it makes it hard for me to enjoy that story, you know, kind of lost in a way. So anyway, next page, we get another pinup, you know, like the ones that are throughout this issue. This one's Captain America, and I really like this one. It's by Cary Gamble, and Captain America is basically standing in a park. There's snow on the ground, and he's giving his shield to a couple kids, and they're using it as like a snow disc to like slide down a hill. So it's pretty cool. Next up, we have an Amazing Spider-Man story. This one from it's plotted by Richard Howell. Stan Lee is doing the script. We have Steve Lytle and Al Milgram on art. John Constanza on letters and Renee Wittestatter on colors. I never had seen Steve Lytle do a Spider-Man story, so I did enjoy it. The art, you know, I'm a big fan of Steve Lytle's art from this era. Real fine lines and love the way he draws faces and hair. But what's interesting is I guess, you know, I think back to like classic Spider-Man stuff that Stan Lee and Steve Ditko did, and it's so good. And the dialogue is not super hokey. I mean, it's a little hokey because it's the Silver Age, but it's not terrible. Here, the dialogue is really corny, and I just don't know, you know, how. I mean, did Stan have much to do with the plot? Maybe it's because he didn't plot it, that he didn't, like the dialogue isn't as sharp as he could do. Maybe he's just, his skills weren't, I mean, I'm not going to disparage Stan Lee. The man was a legend and a genius, and I miss him. And he was like a grandfather to me, even though I, you know, didn't know him personally. But I just wonder, you know, different way of working as opposed to the Marvel method where he just would, you know, tell Ditko, hey, here's my idea for the issue. Now go tell the story. And then he would put in the words after, or John Romita Sr. I mean, I just don't know when it comes down to it, but it's the big Christmas blackout, and Peter's supposed to be meeting Mary Jane to see the lighting of the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree, and he's late, and she's mad. As they head over to watch the tree be lit, it's just as it's lit, and everybody oohs and ahs, the power goes out. And not just on the tree, but like the whole city block, like blocks and blocks around. Big blinding spark, and it's Electro, and he is basically holding the city for ransom, saying, heed my warning, New York, it's a small neighborhood blackout, but it's a sample of what I can do. I'll plunge the entire city into darkness unless I'm paid $1 million. So Spider-Man immediately, you know, jumps into action with Mary Jane saying, Peter, wait, you know, give the police something to do once in a while. Again, it's Mary Jane. She knows Peter's going to go. Like, she wouldn't waste her breath. It seemed a little out of character. There's a pitch battle between Spider-Man and Electro. It's not particularly interesting or particularly groundbreaking. Spider-Man basically ends up taking ornaments off the Rockefeller Christmas tree, big giant ornaments. And in a way, the ornaments help defeat Electro. So I guess that's in the holiday spirit. And then Spider-Man puts the ornaments back on, and the power is restored, and everybody's going to have a happy Christmas. So not Stan's best work. It's okay. For me, the whole reason to read this story, the whole reason to look at the story is the Steve Lytle art. It's gorgeous. I love the way he draws Spider-Man. I love the way he draws Mary Jane. That's really where this story shines, is in the artwork for sure. So next up, we have another pinup. It's a two-page spread, Ron Garney, and apparently one of Santa's reindeer has broken a leg, and so all the reindeer are piled up in the back of Santa's sleigh. So you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and the sleigh is being pulled by Deathlok. So This is another great pinup. He's got a very determined look on his face. He doesn't look real happy to be pulling the sleigh through the snow. Okay, next up we have In the Spirit of the Season. This one's by Carl Potts. Pencils by Rick Levins, Al Milgram on inks, Brad Joyce on letters, and Patty Cockrum on colors. And basically the Punisher takes out some crooks, and when he returns to his hideout later, Microchip's there, and he's like, man, look at this big mess. Christmas is right around the corner, and you know, you're trashing my hard work. I'm gonna have to work all weekend to get the van back in shape. He's like, and Punisher's like, yeah, I got a big stakeout next week, so I need you to upgrade the van's electronic surveillance systems and you know, fix everything that's wrong with it. And he's like, okay, listen, Frank, I'll bet you that you can't go about your business for the next 2 days without killing anybody. No shooting, no stabbing, no hitting, no offense at all. And Punisher's like, why would I even take such a stupid bet? And Microchip's like, if you can do that for 2 days, I'll have your van ready to go for you. But if you don't, you're going to have to take the van as is. And Punisher's like, this is hardly in keeping with the holiday spirit. And I love Microchip's response. He says, what's the pot saying to the kettle? So the next day, the Punisher's out, disguised as Santa, ringing his bell, has the Salvation Army bucket out there. And he's just waiting to be robbed because on the first page of the issue, I forgot to mention this, while he was on his way to take out a drug dealer, he noticed that in a certain neighborhood that these guys were driving by on bikes and stealing the kettles. And then he did a little research and found out it was a recurring thing. So he's setting up a sting operation. And sure enough, it's not too long after he's out there before this guy comes by on a bike and tries to steal the kettle. And then come to find out, he's just a neighborhood kid who, you know, hasn't done much wrong. But there's some big shot in the neighborhood who broke a kid's arm and is threatening other kids and their families if they don't go out and steal these kettles of money for him. So Punisher finds out the address and finds out from the kid that there's a big giant bodyguard out front that punches you so hard in the chest that you know, can't breathe for a week. So Punisher makes a little preparation because, again, remember, he cannot do anything offensively. But the fact that this guy punches people, he's got a plan. So he basically makes like a spiked armor plate. And so when the guy goes to punch him, there's a big clang and the guy just crumples to the ground with like a bloody broken hand that he, you know, smashed against this plate. So Punisher goes inside. He tracks down the guy who has been threatening these kids and forcing them to rob for him. And the guy's like, I'm not going back to jail. And Punisher's like, no, you're going to turn over a new lease on life. You're going to turn yourself in to the police. And Punisher dials the phone for him. He said, I'm not going to hit you or shoot you or stab you or initiate violence of any kind. I'm giving you a chance to turn yourself in. And the guy's like, I'm not going back to prison. And he smacks Punisher across the face with the phone. And then he just stands there. And the guy's like, wait, you really mean it? You're not going to attack me? You're not going to? So the guy's like, all right, then I'm going to go to town, you know? And so he tries to smash a chair against the Punisher, throws a lamp at him, throws a coat rack at him. Punisher's dodging things and saying, well, you're running out of liftable weapons. And just about as the guy's about to take another swing at the Punisher, he grabs him by the shoulder. And then all of a sudden his hand starts to sting and he falls to the ground just as the police show up outside. And Punisher says, well, so because I couldn't do anything offensively, I covered myself with a special solvent tranquilizer combination. And it basically seeps into your skin on contact. So I'm betting the cops are going to come up here, find plenty of evidence to put you away for a long time. And your New Year's resolution should be to sleep with both eyes open once you head back to prison. So soon after that, Punisher heads back to Microchip's garage and says, you know, we had a deal. Go ahead and fix up the van. And the Microchip's like, man, you may have like followed the rules technically, but you didn't keep in with the spirit of the bet. The spirit of the bet was that you weren't supposed to hurt anybody. And Punisher's like, nah, I won this fair and square. you know, going to finagle your way out of this one. Microchip's, okay, I'll do it. But, you know, I don't think it was very gentlemanly of you. You just haven't gotten to the spirit of the holidays. And Punisher's like, man, spirit of the holidays almost got me killed today. And the guy's like, well, but didn't it feel good, right? You didn't kill him or maim him. He just, you know, had to go back to prison. And Punisher's like, yeah, and I'll have to take care of him 4 years from now when he's back out on the street. So it ends up being a pretty interesting story, very, very appropriate story. Again, not one that's really, you know, heavy on the holiday spirit, because I'm with Microchip, man. Like Punisher, like if you made the bet, just chill out for a couple days, man. Like you don't need to go looking for trouble all the time. Take a couple days off. So yeah, not my favorite. And again, written by and worked on by the same creative team that was doing the Punisher at the time. Yeah, it's the 90s, so what are you going to do? Next pinup is by Darren Ock and Steve Montano. It's Fantastic Four decorating a Christmas tree, and the Christmas tree just so happens to be the Impossible Man. So, or at least decorated with Impossible Man ornaments. Next up is a story called Revisionist History. This is the one that stars Doc Samson, written by Peter David, John Hebert on pencils, Mike DiCarlo on inks, Brad Joyce on letters, and Glynis Oliver on colors. The first thing you notice right off the bat, first page of this story, is it's Doc Samson's 90s outfit. I don't know if you guys remember this one, but it's this like red leather outfit with a white belt that has like these red studs on it. And it's like open with big lapels down his chest, like almost to his belly button. And it's got like big lapels, popped collar, giant shoulder pads, and red fingerless gloves. And I remember at the time not thinking it was that bad. I mean, his previous costume was, you know, blue jeans, a red shirt with a yellow lightning bolts, you know, and his hair was like, you know, Farrah Fawcett, layered, you know, hair that was green. So he switches to this costume and he has a, he still has the green hair, but he has a green ponytail, you know, almost like the mullet style, you know, all business in the front, party in the back. So you got to think at the time, well, maybe it's an improvement on the blue jeans and the, you know, the t-shirt with the lightning bolt. But looking at this now, it's so dated. It's so 90s. Like when I saw it, I was like, oh man, that costume is so bad. It's so bad. Anyway, the story is that, he's back, at his, school where he took his Judaism classes, and he's there visiting his old teacher, because he used to go there when he's a very little boy. And as a special treat, he's going to tell them the story of Hanukkah. So he starts to tell them the story of Judah and the Maccabees, but these kids, they're asking all the wrong questions, like, why is your hair green? Did you fight the Hulk? Just all kinds of questions. And he keeps trying to get back to the story. But even when he's telling the story, they keep interrupting. He talks about centuries. They're like, what's a century? Were there people then? Was there cable TV? What did they watch? And so he tries to change the story to make it a little more interesting. So instead of having guns, because, you know, he talks about the Maccabees being soldiers, they're like, well, soldiers have guns. Okay, well, fine, the soldiers have guns. And then when he's talking about Antigonus, he ends up turning him into Ultron, because again, it's got to be, you know, exciting for these kids. And Judea, the city, they're like, it's not some boring old city, right? And they're like, no, it looked like Krypton. And so that's interesting that Peter David says Krypton, like a DC Superman reference here. And so the Maccabees with their guns are you know, fighting the hordes of Antiochus, and then a kid asks, were Captain America and Wolverine there? Sure, why not? So now we see Captain America, Wolverine, and the Hulk, and they're all fighting. The teacher in the background just like shaking her heads, and then Goliath shows up and he's on the bad guy's side, and Captain America takes him out with his shield, and they're like, wait, I thought it was David that hit him with a rock. And I go, that was a Goliath clone. Again, the teacher's like burying her face in her hands. And when they talk about getting into the temple and it was filled with idols, and some kid's like, Elvis is my dad's idol. Yeah, yeah. The temple was filled with pictures and statues of Elvis. So they cleaned out all the idols, and they discovered there was a lamp, but they only had enough oil for one day. And the guy's like, I thought you only put oil in cars. Why don't you just plug the lamp in? Like, it's an old lamp. It didn't have a cord. Why couldn't you use batteries? Well, they didn't have any batteries. So they poured oil into the lamp, and even though it was only enough oil for one day, the miracle was it burned for 8 days. And one of the kids is like, I don't think it was a miracle. It's probably the human torch. He was probably under there and he made the flame go. And Samson's had enough. He's like, look, kid, the Jews beat the Syrians. They cleaned out the temple. They found the lamp. There's only enough oil to burn for one day, and it burned for eight. Get it? And the kid's like, got it. So like, man, why can't we just have Santa Claus? Like, what happened to him? And like, Antiochus got him, and we see a giant Acme anvil fall and smash him. And the kids all kind of stare at him, shocked for a moment, before they start to cry. And he's like, I was only joking. I was only joking. The teacher's had enough. Like, let me guess, no schooling in child psychology, Leonard. You only studied adult psychology. And he's like, look, I'm sorry. They rattled me. I was just trying to get to through the story. And she's like, just go. And as he's leaving, he says, does this mean you want me to back to tell the story of Passover? And she's like, get out of here, just go, and slams the door. So a pretty fun story. I'm not Jewish, so I have no context for how irreverent it is or isn't, or if they would find it amusing. I thought it was funny. I think it's all in good fun, but it's pretty interesting. And maybe the funniest thing of all is that costume. So terrible. Next pinup we have between stories is Ernie Chan, the late great legendary of Ghostwriter, the 90s Daniel Kitsch Ghostwriter. And then we're on to the Thanos story. So Jim Starlin writing, Ron Lim on art, Terry Austin on inks, Brad Joyce on letters, and Tom Vincent on colors. This one's pretty short. Basically, there's some automatons that are cleaning out one of the many bases of Thanos. And he asks them to see the contents of one particular box they're about to throw away, and he finds a doll and it's burnt up, and it reminds him of his daughter Gamora, who that doll used to belong to. And he thinks about how he recruited her and he wanted her to be an assassin, and he should have known from the beginning. She's 5 years old and he gave her that doll to mark Christmas, which apparently is celebrated in a lot of places in the galaxy and the Marvel Universe, I suppose. And he should have known that she wasn't going to make for a very good assassin, because, you know, she gets the doll, she thanks him, but even that is not enough. She says, can we go to the lagoon later today? I love watching the dolphins. And he's like, I got work to do, but maybe. And he's just reflecting on the fact that he should have known she was too soft to make a good assassin. But, you know, he's reminiscing about the relationship he had with her and that particular day, because as he goes into his lab to start working, one of his enemies sneaks in, Zatoral Laxton, and he actually would have hurt Thanos very badly, but right as he's about to fire his weapon and assassinate Thanos, he gets hit in the face with that very same doll that he had just given Gamora, and so he spins around quickly, and he blasts that guy and kills him, but it also damages the doll that he had just given Gamora. And as she's standing there looking on, Thanos, you know, he can't even bring himself to say thank you. He just says, you, and she's like, I know. And Thanos says, well, your doll was scorched in the blast, so, but I'll get you a new one. And she says, no, there's no need for you to bother. I'll make the doll better. The doll will be okay. And Thanos relents and says, you know what, once you get cleaned up, let's go to the lagoon. So Thanos is talking to his automatons, and he's saying, she saved my life, and she thanked me for taking her on the outing, and, you know, I should have known that Gamora would not work out as a good assassin, that she'd one day turn against me. And now she runs with Adam Warlock and his Infinity Watch, and he tosses the doll back in the box and tells his automatons to throw it in the incinerator with the rest of the garbage. So again, very much it ties into what's going on in Silver Surfer and what's going on in Adam Warlock and the Infinity Watch series that was going on at the time. It's not as topical as the New Warrior story. You still can get some stuff out of this. But it's interesting, you know, kind of reflecting on the early days of Thanos and Gamora. In fact, I don't know. I haven't read every single Thanos story. I will eventually in the Marvel Thanos chronology that we're doing right now. But I don't ever remember seeing a story with Thanos and like a five-year-old Gamora. So I thought it was interesting. All right. Next up, we have a Dazzler, a pinup. And it's kind of interesting. She's taking in the sounds of New York City and putting up the sign of peace in light. But the other thing that's interesting is it looks like, and I don't know why this is the case, but it looks like she's been keeping her window open, or maybe she's in some sort of abandoned tenement because there's snow on the ground. You can see like inside on the floor, on top of the floorboards, there's snow. There's a cat too. And you can see cat footprints and you can see Dazzler's footprints. So I don't know, maybe she's hiding out. Maybe that's what was going on in the X-Men comics at the time. Not really sure. Next up, we have an Iron Man story, Holiday on Ice, written by Sholly Fish, Tom Morgan art, Brad K. Joyce on letters, and Ed Lazzarelli on colors. And there's a little note saying the story occurred in happier times for the Stark family well before the events of the current Iron Man issues. Because I think Iron Man's dead right now in this regular Iron Man title. But anyway, we see this this guy, Mr. Macklin. He's going to an employment agency. He's trying to gain employment, but he's an ex-con. So, you know, similar to the 2005 holiday special that I talked about previously. And he's very frustrated. They haven't been able to find him a job. And so he goes to his mom's house and he's thinking about his buddy, the Blizzard, who gave him a spare costume to hold on to, and he's had it. He's like, I tried to go straight. They wouldn't let me. I got to do better than what Donnie did as the Blizzard, but I have no choice because nobody's even going to give me a chance to prove myself. You know, I'm an ex-con, and then that's all they see. So meanwhile, at Stark Enterprises, which that's another thing that was going on in Iron Man at the time, he had changed from like Stark International, whatever it is, just to Stark Enterprises. And so he's throwing a big party, Christmas party. And outside the window, he notices, hey, it's starting to snow. You don't see that every day in Los Angeles, getting a white Christmas, but it's because of the Blizzard. So he calls out Iron Man and says, get out here or I'll huff and puff and knock your house down. And this is one thing that doesn't make sense here. So this Macklin guy, he has the Blizzard costume. He has the Blizzard's powers. Why are you going and attacking Iron Man? Like, if you're looking for a job, like, wouldn't you just go and rob stuff? Don't go looking for the hero. They're going to find you. But I guess this is how he figures he's going to prove himself. So they end up fighting. And for being his first fight, Macklin doesn't do too bad. But ultimately, he's not experienced enough, and everything that he tries, Iron Man has a counter for. Until eventually, he takes a unibeam to the face, and it blinds him, and Iron Man's able to rip his pack off his back that gives him the cold powers, and then give him a punch to the jaw. And Macklin's laying there. He's like, man, I don't know why I thought I could do this. I can't even get a regular job and trying to go straight, and I can't do anything right. And Tony, in the spirit of the season, has mercy on him, has some pity. She's like, you couldn't get a job. Did you try here? Did you try coming to Stark Enterprises? He's like, wait, you'd hire me? Like, if this is true and it's not a scam, it is that time of the year. And, you know, I've had pretty good luck giving people second chances. I've had second chances. So, maybe, in fact, you've heard of one of the guys that I gave a second chance. He used to be a villain. He calls himself Hawkeye, and that's where it ends. So it's not a bad story. There's not really much to it, but it is certainly in the spirit of the season with forgiveness and such. Next pinup is Hulk, who's leaping over a small, sleepy, snow-covered village with a little church and a barn in the background, and He's carrying a bunch of presents, and as he looks up in the sky, he sees Santa and his reindeer flying in front of the moon. So pretty cool. Last story is by Ann Nesenti, Tom Greinberg on pencils, Fred Fredericks inks, Brad Joyce again on letters, Evelyn Stein on colors, and it is a Daredevil story. And this one's really fun. So he's been spending the person that's narrating, I guess not really a person, but the object that's narrating has spent the last 33 years in an antique shop before somebody came and bought him, and who actually bought him was Daredevil. And it's a little lamb. It's a little sheep that has been bought, a little statue of a sheep. And Daredevil is carrying this this gift after he wraps it up somewhere. And the sheep is narrating, saying, you know, I wonder who I'm for. I wonder why this person bought me. And Daredevil swinging over the city, and he stops by a church and overhears Sister Maggie, and the lamb can sense the love and the joy that Daredevil exhibits through his body language and such, just from hearing Maggie's voice. And then Daredevil stops a mugging and actually drops the lamb, and the lamb's thinking, oh, this guy's a hero. He saved that guy. The guy didn't even thank him, but now he's dropped me. Will he know? Oh, he does know as he gets picked back up. And then next, Daredevil goes and listens to some people in a bar. And again, this has a lot of context with what's going on in the Daredevil story at the time, because these guys are talking about the night Daredevil came in and drank with them and hung out and what have you. And apparently some of these characters are probably characters that were in the Daredevil comic at the time as supporting characters. But the little lamb is thinking, man, this guy, he lives such a strange life, you know, all these visitations, a church, a bar, what a sad, strange life he must lead. And where am I going? And then he realizes he's being taken to a home for orphans where there's a toy drive. And this woman is accepting all the donations, and Daredevil hands her the little lamb, and she says, oh, what a lovely little lamb. Oh, wait, it's you. How sweet you are, an angel. See you next year. And she drops the lamb on the on top of the stack, and the lamb sighs. Hopefully the lamb's going to find a good home. I didn't necessarily like that ending, because I'm not sure, like, is the lamb disappointed? Is the lamb not disappointed? Would have been nicer to see Daredevil just give it directly to a kid. But I thought it was really interesting. A very unique way to tell the story through the narrative voice of a ceramic lamb or a little stuffed lamb or anything or something. I thought it was really kind of fun. But again, I think this is one of those where if you're reading Daredevil at the time, which was being written by Ann Nesenti at the time, that you're going to get a lot more out of it. It's going to be a lot richer of an experience for you. But I thought it was a pretty good story. I mean, the art is solid. It certainly feels like a Daredevil story, very street level. It's called The Wrapped Lamb. And again, I just thought that, and when I say wrapped, it's R-A-P-T. So, you know, an engaged lamb, not like a lamb that's been gift wrapped. So yeah, I thought it was a good story. And like I said, the decision to tell the story through the narrative voice of the lamb, I thought was really fun. We do get one more pinup, and it's Steve Lytle and doing Spider-Man. Spider-Man's swinging. He's got Mary Jane in one arm, holding his web with the other. Mary Jane's wearing a Santa hat and has a huge bag of toys over her shoulder. And it's wonderful Steve Lytle art. You know, those fine lines I was talking about, the hair, he does hair so well. It's so beautiful. The webs on Spider-Man are done really, really well. It's gorgeous. It's in black and white. I wouldn't mind seeing a colorized version as well with that bright red hair of Mary Jane's and the Santa hat. That would play real well together. But all in all, a fun holiday issue. Not my favorite. And I think that goes to the topicalness of the stories. Like I was saying, a lot of these stories, you get so much more out of them if you happen to be reading that character's particular ongoing series at that time. So anyway, I still think it's worth reading because there's a lot of good stuff in here. The Samson story was funny, and a lot of the art is great. That Wolverine story that kicked it off with, you know, that you certainly don't need any context. It's just a fun story of a kid using his imagination. So that's a real highlight in this one for sure. So anyway, that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. Hope you are enjoying the 12 days of the Comic Source. Hope everybody's having a safe and happy holiday season. Thank you all for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.